This is Carolyn Cromings, and welcome to the Quit Getting Screwed podcast, where we talk about everything related to contractors, construction, and information to help you run better businesses. Welcome back to the Quit Getting Screwed podcast, where we talk about all the ways not to get screwed in the construction industry. And this is another in my series on 50 state lien laws and really breaking down what you need to have and what you need to do to have a valid lien in every state. And today we're diving in to Louisiana with the Louisiana construction expert, Andrew Vignair. How are you, Andrew?
I'm good. Thank you.
And before we dive into all the things very exciting that I can't wait to get into about liens and whatnot, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into construction law.
Let's see. So initially, I was an engineer. I used to work in Dallas at Fulbright and Jaworski doing patent law, but I wanted to come back to New Orleans. So when I came back to New Orleans, the first job I got was here, and I've been here since 2004. And this firm, Shields Mott, does nothing but construction law. So, you know, I really, really liked it. I had the engineering background. It was good. And so for about, I guess, 20 years now, that's all I've done is construction law, you know. So even though these states try to change the laws, we figure them out. So that's kind of me in a nutshell.
Well, that's good. But Louisiana law has got like, isn't it a different basis altogether? Like every place else is English law and you're something different?
Yeah, we're based on the Napoleonic Civil Code. So, you know, we do have, you know, case law precedent, but almost everything is based on some statute, some revised statute or civil code article is the basis for just about everything. And then, of course, you got the case law interpreting that. But it all comes down to some code article or revised statute somewhere in some book in Louisiana.
Gotcha. And so tell me what you love about New Orleans that you wanted to come back. So I'm curious.
You know, my family is from here. It's kind of all I knew growing up. And, you know, it's the food, but it's the temperature, the weather. You know, my parents were still here. My wife's family was still here. And so we kind of just wanted to get back to home.
Awesome. I can appreciate that. All right, so let's dive into all things liens in Louisiana. So the first question I usually ask is, do you need to be a licensed contractor in Louisiana? And I know that normally HVAC and plumbing, electrical have to be licensed across the board, but besides that, does Louisiana have a separate license that's required?
Yes. I'll go back. The HVAC, plumbing, and electrical, if the work is over $10,000, you have to be licensed. Now, that's the license required by kind of governed by the Louisiana State Board of Contractors. But, you know, there's plumbing code that requires you to kind of be licensed with them. So you have to check because that law is changed, you know, every couple of years it's changed. But in general, yes, you have to be licensed in Louisiana. From a commercial standpoint, a commercial project, if you are a contractor on a commercial project greater than $50,000, you have to have a general contractor's license. You have to. And then mold remediation or doing some type of hazardous removal, no matter what the value is, you have to be licensed. So that's in general. I mean, there's different requirements if you're doing residential work. And then Louisiana also has this category referred to as home improvement contracting. So let's say you were going in somebody's house to remodel their kitchen, okay? If the value is greater than $7,500, you have to be registered. And the difference between a registration and a license, if you're doing registration, you don't take a test. You know, you have to submit proof of workers' comp insurance, general liability, and you're registered, which means you can perform work. But once that value of the home improvement exceeds $7,500, you have to have a residential contractor's license, which requires that you actually sit for an exam.
And how is that? So is that how long does it take to get that license in Louisiana?
You know, you register for the test, and then I think it's a month or two before you get the test. The exam is pretty quick because it's online now. Gotcha. It's all electronic. And then they have board meetings, I want to say once a month. And they go through the applicants and approve them at the board. So, It could take 2 to 3 months. Now they do have reciprocity with some states.
Okay.
But it's not like, hey, here's my license from Texas and you're automatically in. You still have to fill out an application. So someone coming from another state, they got to check out those laws and see if Louisiana has reciprocity. For instance, I'm dealing with some issues where people came in from Texas and other states to help out with the storm. And mm-hmm. they didn't know they were supposed to have this home improvement registration. And that applies if you're doing demolition work. You know, if you're going in to gut somebody's house, you're supposed to have the home improvement registration if the value is over $7,500.
And so what kind of consequences do they face if they're not licensed?
In Louisiana, they look at it as if you're not licensed, you're supposed to be, then the contract is null and void. So
really?
The contract's null and void. So what does that mean? Well, what it means is if you're a contractor and you did work, you may be able to recover the cost of your work, but you're not entitled to any profit.
Gotcha. Very good to know. Okay, so that brings up non-payment. So let's start with private projects. So what do you have to do? What is the first step you have to do to protect your lien rights in Louisiana on private projects?
Okay, well, it depends on who you are. So I'll start with the general contractor. If you are a general contractor, before you begin work on a private project, you have to file what's called a notice of contract. So you got to, and the statutes define what it is. Usually you got to identify the owner, you identify the contractor, you have to have a legal description of the property where the project's going to be, and you have to identify how are you going to get paid? What's the method for payment? What a lot of people do generally is they take the contract itself, they attach a legal property description, they go to the mortgage records and they file it. And the key is it's got to be filed before work begins. If you file it after work begins, which is kind of crazy, you know, no one's really being injured, but if you file it after work begins, as a general contractor, you have no lien rights. Now, this notice of contract, a subcontractor, a material supplier, a lessor of equipment, they don't have to file a notice of contract. This applies to the general contractor only. So on jobs over $100,000, you have to file that notice of contract or the general contractor loses all lien rights.
So they can't, could they file it later on after they start, or it's got to be done? It's only a one-shot deal.
One-shot deal. You file it before work begins. If not, as a general contractor, your lien rights are gone.
Okay, so if we're as a general, it's a project over $100,000, we file the contract. Is there, what else do we have to do to preserve our lien rights as a general contractor?
That's it. You just, now you've gone through the project, you're getting close to substantial completion, so now you have to file it timely, because there's a time window for a general to file his lien. So if he's filed a notice of contract, he's gotten to substantial completion, and substantial completion has filed, then you have 60 days after the filing of the certificate of substantial completion, or what's also referred to as a notice of termination. So it's all based on filing in the mortgage record. So if you're a general, you know, and everything's going smooth, you want to file that certificate of substantial completion in the mortgage records as soon as possible, because that also governs when others can file their lien. Once that, you want to start that time period as fast as possible so that you know, hey, I'm going to cut off the lien period on this date, is how that works. So as a general, if you file your notice of contract, you get a substantial completion, you file that certificate of substantial completion, then you have 60 days from the filing of the certificate of substantial completion to file your lien. Now, that's assuming that the project went all the way through to substantial. Now, if there is no certificate of substantial completion filed, then it's going to be 7 months after substantial completion. That's only when there is nothing filed, no certificate of substantial completion filed.
That's on a project over $100,000.
Correct.
Okay. And so as a GC, when you file it within the, you file your completion, you file your lien within 60 days, do I have to send a notice of the lien that's filed to the owner in any specific time period?
No, you don't have to, but you know, standard practice, what we do is the moment we file a lien, once we get it back from the mortgage record stamp, we send it out to basically everybody above us. You know, general, we send it to the owner, the surety. If there's a lender involved, we'll send it to the lender too.
Okay, so that's for the GC. So what about subcontractors? They're on a project over $100,000. The contract has been recorded. What do they have to do to preserve their lien rights?
Okay, for a sub, there's two different things. There's going to be time periods when a notice of contract is filed, and there's different time periods when a notice of contract is not filed. Okay. So if a notice of contract is filed, a sub has 30 days after filing of the notice of termination. And when I say notice of termination, it could be an actual termination by the owner or certificate of substantial completion. But in all the statutes, it's referred to as a notice of termination. So notice of contract filed, certificate of substantial completion filed, and you're a sub, you have 30 days from the filing of that notice of termination to file your lien. If you don't file it within those 30 days as a sub, no lien rights.
So there's no pre-lien notice before that. It's just 30 days within the substantial completion if it's filed. Okay. And then what is it? How is it different if there's no notice of contract filed?
If there is no notice of contract, then the 30-day period becomes a 60-day period. So if you're a sub, the first thing you really need to do is, and you're getting close and you're thinking you're not getting paid, you really need to find out if a notice of contract was filed, because that is going to determine whether you have 30 days to file your lien or 60 days to file your lien. If no notice of contract, you have 60 days. However, you really, and people ask me this all the time, well, how do I know if a notice of contract is filed? Well, you got to go to the mortgage records and do some digging on the project and find out what's filed. And most mortgage records in Louisiana, not all, but we have 64 parishes. Each parish has got its own mortgage records, and a lot of them are coming online. So it's easy now to go online and search, and you can find if a notice of contract is filed.
Gotcha. So does this change at all? If it's a project under $100,000?
No, they're going to follow those same rules for a sub.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay, so then we've got the sub. So what about material suppliers and sub-subs? How does it work for them?
Okay.
If there is a contract filed, let's start with that one.
Okay, if a notice of contract is filed, then a material supplier has to deliver a notice, what's called a notice of non-payment, to the owner and the contractor, okay, no later than 75 days after the last month, the last day of the month in which you supplied materials.
Gotcha.
I mean, tell me that's not convoluted, you know.
So, the 15th day of the third month or the 15th day of the second month, I mean, you know.
And
so they supply materials. So we're in November. They supply no materials in November. You count 75 days from whenever in November, and then the end of that month is when they have to send their notice.
75 days from the end of November. The last.
Okay.
So if you supply materials in November, you haven't been paid, then at the end of November, okay, you got to give notice within 75 days of the end of November, okay, so you preserve your lien rights. Now, that applies to a supplier of a sub, okay? Not a supplier of a general, a supplier of a sub. And the reasoning is that, well, a contractor knows that his supplier is not getting paid, but he don't necessarily know that a supplier to a sub is not getting paid. And
absolutely.
So they want to make sure they are provided with notice.
And that's the whole thing in every state that I've looked at, is that the whole thing about notice is that you give a chance for the owner and the GC to make sure everybody gets paid before the lien is filed. Okay, so as a material supplier, 75 days from the last day of the month that you supply materials, then when do you have to file your lien?
It's going to be the same, basically the same periods we talked about before.
Okay.
If a notice of contract is filed, you're going to have the 30 days after the filing of the certificate of substantial completion, or 60 days if there is no notice of contract filed.
Gotcha. So is there any special rules for homesteads or residential properties that could change any of this?
Yeah, for residential, there is a specific article, code article, that says if you're working on a residential project as the general, at the time you sign the contract, you have to notify them that you have lien rights if you're not paid. And there is a specific form in the statute, you know, that the general contractor, he should include as just another page of his contract, get the homeowner to sign so that they know there's a potential for lien rights if they don't pay. And if you don't do that, you waive your lien rights as a general. Now, as a sub, you know, you don't have that requirement. So it's really for the general contractor on a residential project.
So like if a sub on a residential project and the GC didn't give that notice, they would still have lien rights.
Yes, because it's not their requirement. They don't have the contract with the homeowner.
Gotcha. Okay, so if we have our liens perfected, they're all good to go. How long are they good for before you have to file suit on them?
1 year.
Okay.
Now, it's different for a public project. You know, the statutes are kind of messed up, but in general, on a private project, you file your lien, let's say in January of 2021, you have to file suit by January 2022 or your lien right is gone. The other thing is, like we just talked about the material supplier, someone who leases equipment, they have a whole nother requirement if they want to have lien rights. So a lessor, someone who leases equipment to a job site, they have to deliver notice to the owner within 30 days after the equipment is placed on the job site.
Okay.
If you don't give the owner notice that you've delivered equipment to the job site, then you can lose your lien right. The alternative is that if you don't give notice, then you can lose your lien, can only be valid from the date you gave notice going forward.
Gotcha.
But if you wait till the end of the job, you're going to lose your lien right on everything forward.
So that is that the only proviso that actually requires like a what we would call a pre-lien notice?
Yes. The only other one would be you have consultants and sub-consultants. They have to notify too. And if they don't give the notice, you know, it's usually they have to give written notice to the owner within 30 days of being engaged. If you don't give notice, no lien rights.
Okay, so that brings up a question. So, like, would architects, engineers who didn't go to the property and do any improvements have lien rights?
Yeah, they don't have to go to the project.
But they have to send that 30-day notice.
Absolutely.
As soon as they're engaged. If they're not hired. So that only applies if they're not hired directly by the owner?
Yeah. Because the owner's going to know about them if they retain them. But let's say a general... maybe a design build project, a general retains an architect. I don't know how the owner wouldn't know, but let's just say he really doesn't know. They don't get paid. If they didn't give that notice within being retained, the chances are they have no lien rights.
Okay, and I kind of skipped over this one because I couldn't wait to get into all the notices, but who can have lien rights in Louisiana? Everybody, or kind of tell me what the law says?
Contractors and subs. Laborers or even employees of the owner that did work, you know, they can have lien rights. Material sellers, obviously, lessors of equipment, and then professional consultant or professional sub-consultant.
Okay, cool. So there's a whole list. All right, so they're good for a year. All right, so if you have to file suit to enforce your lien, can you get your attorney's fees back?
Under the Private Works Act, no. But there are alternative statutes you can take. For instance, if let's just say the owner or the contractor did something inappropriate with the retainage, okay, or with your pay act. So if there's a statute that says if you can establish that the general misapplied contract funds that were owed to you, you can get attorney's fees that way. In Louisiana, there's also a statute. It's an open account statute. And the argument is that you can argue that a construction contract is an open account. Now, the circuits in Louisiana say different things, but there are courts that say, yes, a construction contract is an open account. And under an open account, you are entitled to your attorney's fee. So in that instance, I know when we file suit under the Private Works Act, if we're representing a sub, we say, hey, this is an open account, breached the open account, so now you owe us our attorney's fees.
Is it clearer with material suppliers than it is with subs?
Yeah, because if there is a credit, that's one of the things they look at. If you're giving someone credit, that's kind of the whole point of an open account. But, you know, just recently the circuit out of Baton Rouge has said, no, we think that just about any contract can be an open account. So it's really strange. But look, if you're representing the right party, you're going to say that it's an open account.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's always an open account. Okay. So then to our material supplier customers out there, what is the level of incorporation that they have to prove, or what's required to have a valid lien? Some states are all over the board on this, so I'm kind of curious.
You know, if you have to show that it was either incorporated or consumed in the project, you know, and it's going to be a fact by fact scenario. You know, there's always an argument that if someone delivered material and they can't establish that it was delivered at the site, then they're probably going to have a hard time, you know, because the burden is going to be on them to prove that the material was actually consumed or incorporated into the project. I know we've had some cases where a material supplier, not on purpose, but he included a bunch of invoices and said that these materials were delivered. And then when we had the material checklist from the job site, they couldn't prove it. And so the lien amount was reduced.
So, like, if your material, so you have material suppliers that deliver, but what if they have a will call? Somebody comes in their office and picks it up and says, hey, it's going to this project, but they didn't actually deliver it. Is that enough?
No, I think you're going to have real evidence, you know. Okay. And that's going to be a fact by fact case, depending on the fact.
Gotcha. Okay. Like I said, it's different in all 50 states. That's why I asked.
But the standard is going to be incorporated into the project or consumed on site.
Okay. Good deal. So what about specially fabricated materials that aren't actually delivered, like paints or, you know, stuff that's handmade that can't be used anywhere else? Do you have lien rights for that?
No. If it's not incorporated or consumed in the project, you know, you're not going to have a lien right.
Interesting. Cool. All right. And so is the construction lender at all involved in the lien process? Do they have any liability or?
No. They're not going to have lien rights. I guess it's possible they could have liability if they were kind of inserting themselves in the process. But under the Private Works Act, the whole, you know, the statute gives you obviously a privilege against the property, but it also gives you another claim besides possibly a breach of contract claim against the owner and the general contractor if you are not in privity. You know, you could have a direct claim under the Private Works Act and also a privilege on the property.
So so you have the lien, which is the direct besides the breach of contract. And it sounds like you also have what we have here is like a misapp claim, misapplication of construction trust funds. There could be liability for that too.
Yes. Yes.
Gotcha. All right. So okay. One last question on the private stuff. So can you have a lien on lease space?
Yes. The requirement is that the lessor has to know that the work was going on. I mean, we've dealt with situations as crazy. One of the biggest office buildings here is One Shell Square. People go in there and build them out all the time and they don't get paid. So we file a lien against that space and the lessor obviously knows what's going on. But we've had some situations. I know I tell clients, hey, the contractor tells me I want to go do work on this property, but they don't own the property. They lease it. I said, well, and we give them a form and say, look, notice of lien rights, give it to the lessor so he knows what you're building on that property. But the key is they have to have noticed that the project's going on.
Gotcha. So you can have a lien on the entire property, not just the leasehold interest.
No. It's normally going to be the leasehold interest.
Interest, just the leasehold interest. Gotcha. Okay. And that's different in every state. Okay. So on to public work projects. So can you file a lien on public works projects in Louisiana?
You can. It's a lien, but they refer to it as a sworn statement of claim.
And is it against the actual entity or is it against a surety?
No, it's going to be against the bond.
Okay. So at what level of project, what dollar amount project does Louisiana require bond on public works?
A payment bond is required in Louisiana on all projects over $25,000.
We're the same thing here in Texas. Okay, and so then, first off, how do you get a copy of that bond? if there is one?
It's going to be, it's normally recorded in the mortgage records. So you go to the mortgage records and get a copy. And then I want to say, I thought that AIA 8201, or maybe it's the 101, says, and I know there's a statute in Louisiana that if you request a copy from the owner, from the general contractor, they're supposed to give you a copy of the bond.
Yeah. See, like in Texas, we have that rule too, and they're not required to record it, but it's their bond. So you know how easy that is to get. So, you know, I got to go do a public information request. It's take 30 days or, you know, pray to the bond god that somehow I'm going to get it. I don't know. Anyways, it's great that it's recorded. It makes things easier. Okay, so we start a public works job. We get a copy of the bond. As are the notices the same as the privates, or is the notices different? How do I preserve my bond claim rights on a public project?
Yeah, it's the notices are very similar. And then the only caveat is that I know when we represent somebody and we file a lien, because even though it's a public project and it's a claim against the bond, you still got to go record it in the mortgage records, just like you would private, you know. So what we do is we always give notice to the surety, you know. Look on the notice of contract and the bond. They're usually going to have someone listed on the power of attorney form for the bond, identifying who it is, and we send that notice to everybody.
Okay, so the same thing applies, you know, that if you're a sub, you got to file the bond claim or the file it in the real property records 60 days after the note, 30 days after the notice is filed.
So it's 45 days for public projects.
Okay. And the, so they and file. The, go ahead.
I was going to say the key with the public works is that some cases that come out that say if you file it premature, it's invalid because
really?
The statute. Oh yeah, for not for private, but for public. Because the statute, I want to say, had the language shall, you know, so it has to be after. If you file it early, you know, then the lien is no good. Now, while the claim may be no good, the argument in reality is that, look, the surety knew the whole point in Louisiana to have a payment bond is to protect people that don't get paid. So, you know, those sections in court usually end up getting paid. But the hard rule is that if you file it premature under the Public Works Act, the statement of claim is invalid.
So you have 45 days after the notice of acceptance of the project is
right,
filed?
Right, after it's filed.
Gotcha.
So in actuality, if someone holds a certificate of substantial completion or doesn't file it, they're just keeping the lien period open. You know, it could technically stay open forever because if they don't record it, then you just wait. But what ends up happening in a situation like that is people file suit before the certificate of substantial completion is even filed because I know in Louisiana there's a lot of instances for whatever reason the public entity is being stubborn. Even though they're using the project, punch list isn't done, they will not sign off on the certificate of substantial completion, even though it is. So the lien period is open. You know, actually it hadn't even begun because they haven't filed it. So people that, you know, they'll file suit ahead and just say, look, you know, I can't file my sworn statement of claim because the lien period is not open, so I'm making my claim against the bond anyway.
Yeah, and I can't imagine that. And I'm sure there's multiple reasons why they don't do that, but it must be frustrating. Okay,
yeah.
So on the other side, on the private side, is there any penalty for filing stuff early or sending notices early?
No.
Good.
I mean, let me rephrase that. The only penalty is there is a statute in Louisiana. If someone files a lien that is incorrect, let's say they got the incorrect amount, or you think legitimately they don't have a lien right, you know, you can send them a notice and you can say, hey, look, your lien is invalid for XYZ, take it off, and give them 30 days. If they do not take it off, then you can file suit to have it removed, and you can collect your penalties and fees in that instance.
That we have that here too, and that can be pretty painful if you do it the wrong way.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen clients suffer, and that's painful. Well, that's all awesome information. So let me ask you, do you represent mostly subcontractors, GCs, developers? Kind of what's your mix? I'm just curious.
You know, primarily general contractors, but, you know, we represent developers and owners too, and we represent subs. We don't represent a lot of material suppliers, but every now and then we will. Kind of just depends, but, you know, primarily general contractors.
And so I'm kind of curious about what you think, and I'm taking everybody's temperature on this, about the status of contracts in the construction industry, whether it be a general contract or a subcontract. What is your just general opinion? I'm curious.
You know, I think in general, sometimes contractors do not do a good job of really reading the terms. They're so anxious to get the job and to get the job started. A lot of, not, I'm not saying all, but in general, they just sign off and they worry about it after the fact and it's too late, you know?
Yeah, and I think that, and because there's multitudes of reasons, and this is one of the other projects that I'm working on, is that I know the GCs are pushing down the liability to the subs because they took all the liability from the owner, but then the subs don't even sign it, and they have all this liability, and they don't even know what they signed. And so there's, I think there's two parts that are wrong. Number one, they couldn't understand it if they wanted to, if they took the time to read it, because it's all in legalese. And number two, it shifts 1% of the liability downhill. So even if we just worked on the first one, which is let's make it understandable, you know, I think it would, I would think we would have less of a shortage of people willing to work in the construction industry and, you know, better managed project because they know what's expected. So that just kind of, I just, everybody I talk to says the same thing. And I just think we can do a better job somehow.
Yeah, I think you're actually right. I mean, for instance, and I tell clients this all the time, look at the AIA general conditions, the 201. You know, it's a 60-page document, and then you got the 10 to 12-page 101 general contract, so you got 70-something pages. And, of course, as the general, you push that down the sub. Like you said, they're not going to understand that, but number two, they're not reading it. They're going to sign anything because they want the job. And then you throw in the, hey, look, I only got to pay you if the owner pays me, you know. And then they're coming to you with the 70 pages of contract, and they go, I don't even know really what's going on in here. So it's a complete mess.
Yeah, so if you ever need a client that's a sub that wants to understand their subcontract, I wrote a book called Quit Getting Screwed, and it's all in plain English. It tells them what they're agreeing to, so at least they'll know.
That's great.
I've seen so many clients that, like, right, as lawyers, we never see a good project. And I've seen so many clients that go out of business, not because they did a bad job, but because they signed a contract they didn't understand what it meant. And so I think they want to get the job. I think they have this false sense of security that there's some sort of rules out there that protect them, and they don't think that this horrible stuff can be in this contract. And I know if we could push back against the GCs, and the GCs could push back against the owners, say, my subs aren't going to sign this, we got to find somewhere in the middle that we could make some progress.
So. Yeah. No, I agree with you.
That's my soapbox. That's what I'm on currently. So, no, but I do appreciate all your time and filling us in on everything Louisiana. And we're going to put all your contact information in the show notes. So if anybody wants to reach out to you, if they have thinking about doing projects in Louisiana, or especially from here from Texas, that happens a lot, or want to have any other questions for you. But I appreciate the time. Is there anything else you wanted to add that you think I missed?
No, I think you covered everything. You know, I think what generals and subs got to get a handle on is, in Louisiana, at a minimum, you know, Louisiana has two main statutes that govern construction. You have the Private Works Act, which governs all of private construction, and the Public Works Act. So I think they got to get a handle on understanding what those two are, and understanding the lien rights, because a lot of people come after it's too late. And believe it or not, the lien rights do put a little added pressure on the owner or the surety, you know, when the goal is, hey, I want to get paid, or at least I want to get to a point where I can settle and get some funds and move on, you know, because you're really in a bad situation if you hadn't even taken care of your lien rights, you know.
Absolutely. I mean, and that's the thing, is that's why I'm doing this, so everybody knows what they are and that everybody has them. And yes, it might be a little bit different in every state, but it takes your debt from being unsecured to being secured. Now, who wouldn't want to do that? I mean, I don't know any other business you can do that in, except for the mortgage business. Okay, and maybe a car, because you can have a lien on your car too. But, you know, it's just amazing that you can do this, and more people need to do it. And a lot of the times, at least from my experience, if you follow the notices and you don't actually have to file the lien. It's just the leverage of having that right. So.
Yeah. No, I think you're right.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Andrew. And we'll have on again sometime for another interesting Louisiana topic.
I'd be happy to. Right. Thank you so much.
All right, thanks. That was lots of fun.
All right, you too.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Quit Getting Screwed. I hope you found it helpful. If you like what you hear, please like us and follow our podcast. If you want further information, you can find us at subcontractorinstitute.com. We're also on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram. And the book is available on Amazon. Tune in 2 weeks from now for a new episode. Thank you.